Hello there, welcome to the Tech Means Business podcast. This is a series of podcasts in which I talk to interesting folk in that particular space where the worlds of business and technology combine. Today we're talking about delivering services to citizens, government agencies, NGOs, and public sector organisations of all types. Now it's here, of course, that cloud can provide many answers in the IT sphere, not only in terms of efficiency, but also in terms of that elusive value for money. I'm joined today by an IT service provider that specialises in public sector cloud transformations. That's Wipro. It's a company that's rooted deeply in public service all over the world. It's my pleasure to introduce Anurag Aran and David Asfaha from Wipro. Gents, it's traditional around these parts for guests to introduce themselves. So, Anurag, I guess you're first up. Give us a few words of introduction, if you would, about yourself and how you ended up at Wipro.
Yeah, sure. So, my name is Anurag Aran, based out of UK. I started 23 years ago, and throughout I had been into the infrastructure and cloud services. Initially, I was working closely with US and Middle East customers, but last 15 years, I'd been more prevalent in Europe, especially the UK, Africa customers. And, the only thing I want from my relationship with the customer is to look upon me as a trusted advisor. And I keep that my focal point throughout the life cycle of the advisory services. So currently my portfolio is Europe Advisory and Consulting for Europe. And right from the consulting to pre-sales to solution and the delivery, I'm with the customer.
Thank you, Anurag. And David, your turn to grab the mic. Give us a few words of introduction, if you would.
So first of all, thank you very much for having me on the podcast, Joe. My name is David Asfaha. I'm a consultant in the data and analytics practice here in the UK at Wipro. I have 15-year experience as a consultant in this space. My speciality is working as an interface between business stakeholders and IT, and I enjoy going into an organization, figuring out where the problems are that can be addressed through data, analytics, machine learning, ML, AI, artificial intelligence, and then kicking off an end-to-end solution that lands in the hands of frontline staff that makes their lives easier, allows them to deliver faster, and do things that they couldn't do before. I have a background in consulting in London, and where I've been specializing in public sector for the last few years. And now I've joined Wipro to grow the offering here as well.
Thank you both. So my first question concerns differences between the public and private sectors with specific regard to cloud migrations. David, I wonder if you could outline some of the differences that you guys find between the two sectors.
Of course. So at the planning stage, the challenges that many public sector organizations face are concerns around privacy, are concerns around security and safety of the data. When national data sets are sent into a cloud environment, there is a perception that there is a lack of control or that it is less secure than running on local servers. And while those perceptions are not correct. There is a big challenge to overcome that kind of sentiment that exists within some public sector organizations. It is important to highlight that even the cybersecurity government cybersecurity guidelines often encourage the use of cloud services where possible. And so there is an education piece or a consulting piece around changing hearts and minds on this topic.
And if I may add to what David said, so I've been working with the public sector and private sector, similar sizes as well. Top of my mind, when you think of the public sector, the priorities compared to private sector are very different because public sector have a responsible boundary, keeping up with the government policies, compliances and processes. And they have to do a data classification necessarily, not unlike a private. Private, we do it more for data classification or storage tiers or optimize the cost. But here it is, it could be data which is official to top secret. It could be a security data. It could be a citizen's data, police or prison data, defense data, and so forth. So many health services and life services and pharma. And every data classified has its own nuances in terms of that it should not go out of the boundaries of the country. And hence you see the sovereign cloud alongside hyperscale. I will not say that public sector cannot go to hyperscaler. Hyperscalers are also based, opening their data centers in UK and Europe into locations. But there are also sovereign clouds like UK cloud, and that is how there is an advent. It is about having the control of the country on its own data. So if it is a Middle East or a UK, they don't want to share that any US federal government out of a security concern peeks into the any kind of a national security data. So that is the first difference which comes to my mind. And now looking at the macro economic environment, CFOs in the public sector are realigning the digital strategy. So whatever they have thought of at a pace, this pandemic has kind of given them a thought that should they realign? And answer is yes. And rather than consuming cloud only for the growth, it should be consumed for the business growth. It should be used to break the silos in the organization. So, it is very important for public sector organizations now to look beyond the data centers in the areas which will set the stage for better returns. Because in these uncertain times, they have to look at the revenue streams, they have to look at their returns, and they will have to see whether cloud can deliver the business advantages to a public sector organization, like aligning business to IT. Is it improving the reliability and agility for their consumers?
Interesting, Anurag, that you mentioned medtech and pharma. Obviously, those are going to be industries that have to treat data very carefully, very specifically. And that, I guess, must shine through, David, if I can put this one to you, that data governance and data security must really be very much front and foremost in the minds of procurement specialists in public sector organisations.
Yes, it is. We find that when we engage with the public sector, there will be a large number of criteria that we need to fulfil that relate exactly to how we safeguard the data that is trusted to us, that we have the people with the right level of clearance or the right level of approval to handle of the data, that we meet cybersecurity and nationality requirements, whatever the case might be. We have a good track record of delivering all of those capabilities or meeting all of those requirements to work with those data sets, and we understand why public sector in the UK has these concerns. There is a large set of practices that do come from the private sector around how to set up data governance, how to run data management and data governance. Many of these capabilities are built in to public cloud and hyperscalers, and we make use of the best in breed capabilities that they offer to get up and running very quickly and deliver those safeguards that public sector requires from us.
Cloud technologies at the moment are making headlines all over the world, typically around artificial intelligence and machine learning. But if we take a step back from that cutting edge at the moment, what are those cloud technologies that are benefiting taxpayers? Where's the value coming from?
Central public sector has large interfaces with the government, with the public. Public calls up about how to fill up tax returns. They call up about their council tax bills. So they engage with, or about benefits, or about healthcare. They engage with public sector in so many different ways. Resource constraints are unfortunately a big pressure for central government, for public sector. AI and ML technologies can really help with two things in my mind. On the one hand, help frontline staff to deliver a faster, more effective service to the public by being able to, for example, trawl through large amounts of legislation to find the relevant piece that they need to pass on to a citizen who's struggling with their tax return, but also by looking at historic interactions that the public had with different public sector organizations to then find trends. If documentation is lacking in some area because we keep being asked the same question over and over again, then that helps us, or that then we can help public sector create the right documentation to help citizens. So I think those are some of the ways in which we can help public sector offer better service to citizens.
Anurag, do you want to come in on that one as well?
Yeah, so you see, the public sector organizations cannot ignore the adoption of cloud, because that would amount to keeping up with the performance levels. Public sector, we can think of a digital backbone. They have four different pillars. So the most important is consumers of the services of the public sector. The other one is the way they run the operations. The third one is the employees' productivity. And fourth one is obviously the product or the services innovation. Now, if you look at the data fabric among all these four pillars, you cannot avoid cloud adoption, because cloud is the common denominator out of that. And when we look at, the example which David gave, HMRC, there are so many queries from the customers. Now, why can't people implement an AI ML-based NLP, natural language processor chatbot? And those chatbots are very quick. They can look at different PDFs or documentation, and the learning time is extremely small. And you can slowly look at that whether 50% or 70% or 80% of the workload can be reduced. I think cloud will become a sole source of 360-degree mirror in encompassing the solutions to improve the customer experience. Ultimately, it is about customer experience. Customer has to come and work onto that. There are a lot of AI ops which can be implemented. When I say AI ops, if you handle one incident, and if an incident is getting repeated, we automatically can do a root cause analysis. We can do a problem management, and we can create the SOPs today is followed by the manual guys or manual process to a automated one. So we call it AI ops, and it is on a regular basis. You can also do some chaos engineering, which means introducing the error and see if there are single point of failures, into the services which consumer is getting. So these are the things which AI and ML brings in. And when you do an AI ML, it also obviously contributes to a lot of sustainability charters as well. And I'm not ignoring the fact that IoT is very, very prevalent now. IoT solutions are across the waste management, across the building management, even your team's meeting management, your transportation, the way you schedule, the whole digital twill in the factories. So in a nutshell, I'm coming back to the point I said, you cannot ignore the cloud. And it is a combination of a hyperscale and a sovereign cloud for the public sector.
You've said there that cloud is very much the unifying factor between those four. I absolutely accept that and understand. But let's talk about cost. Let's talk about that old devil money. It doesn't really matter what your politics is these days. It's pretty much undeniable that the public sector is having, shall we say, something of a squeeze on it, and has been for a number of years. And hyperscalers, I know, don't come cheap. So even though I'm in danger of playing devil's advocate here, isn't it a better idea for public sector organisations to keep investing in their own infrastructure, update their own hardware, run their own stuff in their own data centres, rather than start paying, sometimes through the nose, for hyperscaler services?
I would have been with you a few years back, and I still agree with you if you do not do it in the right way. So cloud will be spirally expensive if you do the same sizing the way you run it on-prem today. That is not the way you adopt the cloud. So the most important thing is the FinOps, or the cost optimization, throughout the life cycle, right from the design up to the intelligent operations. What I mean is, if you are running a old Power 7 machine, a critical infrastructure onto that, compared to that, in the cloud, you have got a Power 9 machine, a lot of compute improvements, and hence you pay less. So right sizing of the infrastructure is the first one. Even the chipset makes a difference. The other part is when you plan into the cloud, you do not look into that. What do I need for public services for 24/7? What do I need 16/5? And what do I need only for 8 hours? Am I shutting down gracefully and getting it up again when I need it? So there are various factors. Are you looking at your estimated cost versus the actual cost? Now, you might have planned that I will spend so much in a year, but you end up spending 2x or 5x. So why is it so? It could be because you have not done your database optimization, because your licensing policy is not right, because all the licenses in hyperscalers and cloud is not the same as on-prem. Some of them go 1.5x or 2x. No, and there are various other factors into this. So FinOps is a consulting exercise, and it is a continuous consulting throughout the life cycle, right from the design. So I would say that today I may not agree that cloud is not cheap. It is cheap provided you are doing the right things. You are, replacing your assumptions with the exact estimations, and you know why.
If I could jump in there as well, I think something great Anurag said there was that those peak times. So I think something we see in public sector is two types of peaks. You have annual peaks, like people looking at flu pages in winter, and you also have peaks because government is sort of like your first point of call in times of crisis, like we saw during COVID, how public sector stepped up to deliver services. So all of a sudden, you have a huge increase in demand on services provided by government. In an old school way, we would have seen a point of failure where no money can recover for where the hardware you have just couldn't meet requirements in exceptional times like during COVID. With cloud, it's so easy to scale up and just provide an additional capability. When it comes to planning for services, if you know you have a yearly peak where your usage triples or quadruples or is 10 times, then when that happens, you have to buy your hardware to support that peak. And that's very expensive. And you pay for 90% of your capacity, which you'll never touch, which you'll never use. With cloud, you pay for that baseline, and maybe it's a little bit more expensive than if you bought the bare metal. But when that jump in demand arrives, you pay almost nothing else on top. So I think that's a great opportunity for cloud to save in public sector. And then another example that I thought of is when you plan a new service. Public sector needs to create a new service to expose to citizens, perhaps a revamp of something to do with license plate registration or car registration, whatever it may be. In an old world, because the data is so sensitive, you need to find a secure site to store the data. You need to have security guards, you need to have power supplies, and you need to have backup power supplies, and so on, as well as all the tin and all the servers. In the world of cloud, all of those requirements go away. Yet there is no additional capital expenditure or operational expenditure that comes from having another data center up and running. You just press a button and you have all the capacity you need.
Now, I know that the hyperscalers over the last few years have been making a big noise about their ecological footprint and their carbon emissions, and we're all aware very much of some of the, if you like, green aspects or lack of green aspects to data centres at scale. Is that concern over the ecological footprint of the public sector something that Wipro can help the organisations you work with?
There is, yes. This is something that we help public sector organisations with a lot. One of the biggest benefits I see cloud delivering is perhaps an indirect benefit, which is that it makes it so much easier and so much more accessible to do data analytics, machine learning, AI. And we've deployed AI, ML, analytics in a wide range, or artificial intelligence, in a wide range of contexts that had a direct impact on reducing carbon footprints. One direct impact on reducing carbon footprints might be projects that directly impact the ecology of a region. So, for example, we might help a public sector organization evaluating satellite or plane data or drone captured data, videos, hyperspectral imaging, that is then processed with AIML to look at things like forest cover of a certain region. Are as many trees being grown as we expect? Are we increasing the amount of tree cover as much as we need? So I think that's a direct benefit. An indirect one is by looking for optimizations. So, for example, working with perhaps an organization that needs to dispatch people to do certain inspections, to do certain kinds of investigations on the ground, we have worked with them on predictive maintenance pieces that helps with something like, let's take an example of road inspection. We need to have someone drive up and down a road to look for a certain danger that needs to be addressed to increase safety. So by using footage captured perhaps by cars or by planes or drones and evaluating them using AI and ML, we can then, which is artificial intelligence and machine learning, we can then reduce the amount of driving and movement of people that's required, which has a direct impact on reducing CO2 emissions.
Oh, that's fascinating, actually. That's something I hadn't given a great deal of thought about. Obviously, I'm obsessed with data centers and their carbon emissions. I hadn't actually given much thought to reducing the number of, for instance, road miles traveled by people who work for public sector organizations and how that can come about as a result of overall efficiencies. Anurag, do you want to come in on the overall green issues here?
Yes, of course. So I think CSR is extremely important. UK government and government in Europe gives a lot of benefit to the service providers, public sector organizations for the CSR, and public sector organizations should harness this benefit. Now, we have already touched upon what are the elements of that. David touched upon one element. So let me try to look at holistically. So you are at the front end. You have the field force, field services workers. You have the employees. So I'm talking about the desktops. So if you look at the desktops, you don't have to have a desktop for everyone. You look at the personas, and you will find 50% of the people can live with a thin client, which means you are using a virtual desktop technology and you are reducing the footprint. We have done it for several customers. We have done over 1 million VDIs so far, which is 25% of them in cloud and rest on cloud. And this reduces the carbon footprint. Now come to the data center side. You spend more than 50% on power and cooling of the data center. So when you reduce the DC footprint, you are obviously reducing your carbon emission. On top of that, if you look at the macro level, you are right sizing, so your compute has reduced when you go to the cloud, right? You have a circular economy wherein you have to dispose the assets in a certain way, or you have to look at the reusability of the asset before disposing. So it has to be a disposal process. And then when you look at a coding, you will find that within a single organization, one unit does not know that they are doing the same kind of a development which other unit is doing. Unfortunately, we have done some audits and we have found that organizations are not aware, only because they don't have a common services layer or a center of excellence which knows that yes, there is some amount of duplication happening in the organization. So it is a waste of compute. The other part is more and more, even the hyperscalers are coming with the low code, like Microsoft or Google have come with a low code or a no code kind of a regime now. So especially public sectors, if I look at NHS, every NHS is a different unit, and you will find that you have a very heavy database loaded kind of a form to fill in. Now those all can be replaced with a very low code or a no code. So when you are low code or no code, obviously you are using the carbon footprint because there's less compute. And so is the AI ML, again, because it is reducing your effort. So all of these factors in the IT put together is contributing to your sustainability goals. Each CFO or a CEO has a goal. And I would like to say that the CIO should be the advisor to the CEO and the board in terms of how to get those CSR initiatives using the IT to their advantage. Now, this is IT, while David also touched upon non-IT, which is very much into the solid waste, into the way you do lighting in your office, the way you sit in the office, the way you do the occupancy in the office, the way you schedule the transport, and it is n number of things. We can go on and on. So there are IT and non-IT initiatives brought together to contribute to the sustainability and achieve the carbon zero. In fact, in Wipro, we have pledged 55% reduction by 2030 and net zero by 2040. And we are also the founding member of Net Zero Foundation.
Okay, so you guys have worked with private sectors all over the world. A kind of elevator pitch then. I wonder if you could give us three things that Wipro has got from its public and private sector influence and work around the world that it can bring to the table. David, I'm going to throw that one at you first, if I may.
So three things. The first one is partnerships and alliances. We have a wide range of organizations that we work with, from the hyperscalers to different parts within Wipro, whether it's design it, ideas, our design people. We have engineering expertise. We have also different sort of tech companies that are within our orbit that Wipro has a partnership with or very close relationship with. So we bring some of the best in breed technology. And I think that's a very important thing for us. Second, and I think it's important to have that kind of ecosystem of help, of ideas, of capabilities, of skills to bring to bear on a problem to crack it as effectively, as efficiently as possible. The second one is starting small and scaling up. The great thing about cloud is the flexibility. You can scale up and down as you need. So there's no need to have a big bang, big migration, big implementation. Can we do a small thing? Can we work? Can we try something out, see how it works? Are we comfortable, and then scale it up? And then the last business is be business driven. We spoke a lot about IT. That's what we are. But I do my best work when I work with someone who's going to benefit directly from what I'm building. So from the first meeting, from the get-go, it's great to have a business partner, someone from finance, HR, sustainability, whatever it is, to kind of work lock in step, to work with really closely, to make sure that what I build is exactly what they need, but also is usable, easy to access, intuitive, and so on. So that's the lessons that I have.
Thank you, David. And Anurag, what three things are you bringing to the table?
I would say that most important is to choose your right partner for the cloud journey very, very carefully. Because public sectors are under pressure. CIOs have to break the silos, and they have to also look at the huge legacy debt they are carrying, and what is the right way of creating that organization culture. And that culture starts right from the governance. So even if you are starting a cloud journey, so the entry point could be you are starting a cloud journey, or you are already into the cloud, so are you efficient? In both the cases, is governance missing in the organization? Have you thought of the roles which should change if you have adopted the cloud? Have you thought of cross-skilling the roles? Are you running the operations intelligently? As I say, all of these, in fact, there are very critical decisions to make for the CIO, that what to retire, what do they don't need? People often neglect that. And if there is a transformation, like I took an NHS example, can we replace it with low code? Answer is yes, we can, but we need to identify that. And what is, most important, the composable modular services for agility. So you don't have to adopt everything in a big bang. David also iterated that. It has to be a composable cloud adoption in terms of what you need. And most importantly, for the public sector, it should be a risk-free. So they should look at SaaS, followed by PaaS, and then the IaaS, the infrastructure as a service. And they should see that without breaking any application, how can they go to the cloud? Can it be just lifting and shifting rather than modernizing? Modernization is important in the cloud, but then you have to take your bets on what do you want to do first, or how do you want to take it. The other advice would be look for the proven experiential, IP and assets. The SIs who are mature into the journey and you are using almost a service catalog based off approach. It is as simple as you are running your IT operations. If you are running that in an industrial way, in a factory model, can you reduce your cost by up to 60%? This is possible because you don't have to worry about the skills. You don't have to worry about, the future proofing. When I say future proofing, the cloud technology is changing very quickly. Today, you look at an infrastructure database. Tomorrow, then you have a serverless, then you have a Kubernetes, and then you have an open source, and then you have a IaaS to PaaS. So technology is changing very fast. So go with a partner who is already invested into this. Do not look into, you can't get all the skills yourself. And last and the third most important is the cost optimization aspect, which should be embedded by design from the start to finish. Otherwise, you could again face the cost of 2x or 5x against the expected spend in cloud. I think that is a constant factor throughout the lifecycle of the cloud adoption.
So when listeners are listening in their cars, cooking the evening meal with headphones in, whatever people do while they're listening to podcasts, I guess, and they decide they'd like to find out a little bit more about Wipro and its work in public sector organisations, David, what should the first steps be, I guess?
Wipro is part of gCloud 13. We have 140 offerings listed on that site, so public sector will be well aware of this gCloud. Then you can also visit us at wipro.com, where you'll find many of the solutions that we discussed on this podcast explained in greater detail as well. If I could add a couple more, you can also search for Wipro FullStride Cloud to read our latest report on cloud technology. And then last but not least, if you search for Wipro Public Sector, you'll find examples that are Wipro delivering in the public sector.
Well, I'm afraid the music coming up there gives us the signal that we've reached the end of our allotted time. I'd like to thank both guests today from Wipro, that's Anurag Aaron and David Asfaha. Thanks ever so much, guys, for coming and joining us today.
Thank you.
A pleasure is ours.
And thank you as well, dear listeners out there. And I hope that you can join me next time on the Tech Means Business podcast. Bye for now.